The following audio is from The Village Church. More information about The Village Church is available at www.thevillagechurch.net.
How's it going? Good, good. All right, my name is Blake Chilton. I am one of the ministers here on staff. I got a call from Shay Sumlin, our campus pastor, on Wednesday, saying that he had had a death in the family. His grandfather had passed away, and he had to leave town after he'd been gone for a pretty long while doing some business with our church. And had to go preach that funeral and kind of minister to his family. So you guys be in prayer for him as he's out this weekend doing that today and be back tomorrow. But he'll be back with us this next weekend. So anyway, so I get a call on Wednesday saying that I was up. So I had to get things ready starting on Wednesday to preach this weekend. And I don't know how they determined that. Like if they were like, hey, it's family weekend. It's going to be kind of a crazy environment. Kids in there screaming. I don't know what they were thinking. Like, oh, Blake's used to that. He does high school ministry. He's used to distractions. Or if they were like, you know, which minister has the most kids on staff? And I have four, so I don't know if that like bumped me up to the front. I don't know how that worked because, I mean, my life, I'm used to just chaos, right? And a lot of loud noises. Matter of fact, my wife left town last weekend, took the kids and went and visited her parents. And I came home to an empty house one night and really got kind of creeped out, right? Have you been there? Like you're so used to noise and you come home and it's quiet and you're like, man, I got to turn the TV, the microwave, something on. I got to get some noise going on in here because it's really kind of freaking me out. So man, this whole environment with kids in here, and I said this at the five, but the kids were like perfect, like angels. So I don't know what's going on with those kids. Maybe these kids are a little more rowdy, and I hope so because I'm used to rowdy. That's just kind of the way it is. But anyways, I'm here, man, and I'm excited about this weekend, family worship that we get to have kids in here of all ages, I guess first grade, all the way up to high school. Man, I love this because this right here that's the church. It's not just adults, man. Our kids are part of this place, a part of the village, a part of the church as it is. And so I love having kids in here to worship and to get to model that. Right? That they get to see you guys worshiping the Lord, that they get to see you guys with your Bibles open in your laps and listening to a sermon and they get to live that out. And so anyways, I love this part of the weekend. And so I'm excited about that. One thing that this weekend is not a pass for you guys. Right? And I think we preach this enough, we say this enough, that you guys know that that's not all you do as parents is just bring your kids to church, drop them off, and the kids' village staff handles them, right? Or the little village staff handles them, or middle school staff handles them. And they do a great job of that. But that ultimately, it's still your job. It's still your job as the parents to disciple your children and teach them about the Lord. And there's different ways to do that. Deuteronomy 6 talks about kind of a formal way to do that and then an informal way, right? And in the formal way is that you have a kind of a setting set aside where you go, hey, at 7 o'clock at this appointed time, we're going to come together. We're going to worship the Lord and we're going to teach the scriptures and we're going to do this. And then there's an informal time where you go, hey man, let's just go to soccer practice. And as things come up on the way there, we're going to talk about the Lord. Or as this friend, neighborhood friend, punches you in the throat and hurts you, we're going to talk about the Lord and talk about forgiveness. And we're going to kind of bring that kind of stuff up. And so there's a formal way and there's an informal way. And that you as the parent should be taking a primary role in both of those. Because here's the deal. And I know that our culture doesn't teach this. You guys as parents are the primary influencers of your children. You are. Our culture doesn't teach that, and I know there's all kinds of things trying to grab them and trying to influence them, but as parents, you are the primary influencers. Years ago, I went to a student ministry conference, and they were talking about this idea about our time as student ministers and how much time we get with our students. And so I'm thinking, man, I get a lot of time with these guys, right? I get Wednesday nights, I get Sunday nights, I get to see them on Sunday mornings. I see them here. Some of them I disciple on the side. You know, we go hit up some Chick-fil-A and we talk about Jesus there and we're going to go in through a book. I mean, I get all this time with them. And sometimes there's these impromptu things where we'll go hit up a game, we'll go see a game, or we'll go do this, or we'll go, you know, just hang out, go play ball or whatever. And so I was like, man, I get a lot of time. And one interesting thing they told us at this conference, they were like, hey, even that kid, Even the church punk, right? The kid that's at everything. Every time the doors are open, he's the first one in there. He's the kid that's an hour early to everything. And you're like, hey, if you're going to be here, can you help set up? I mean, that kid, okay? Even that kid, you get 2% of his time. 2%. And I was kind of shocked by that. I was like, there's no way. There's no way. So I kind of started thinking through that. And I'm not good at math, so I had a friend help me. And we kind of started thinking through that. And I was like, yeah, that's true. The parents get the majority of their time. The parents get the majority of the time. And even some secular things. I was looking at a study that was done at the University of Georgia. Go Dogs. I mean, Georgia fans. All right, that's fine. Yeah, I was looking at this study in 2006. They did a PRISM initiative, not prison, like kids behind bars, but PRISM, P-R-I-S-M. It's an acronym, stood for something. I don't know. But they were saying that they were pushing this very thing, and they were like, of all of our research, parents are the greatest influencers of their kids. Once again, over and over. And I think that's why God pushes it back. One more reason God pushes it back on you guys as the parents to go, you are the primary influencer. Therefore, you are the chief discipler in your children's lives. And what a huge, huge responsibility. And some of you may be great at the informal times, and some of you may be great at the formal times, and some of you may be horrible at the formal times. I mean, that's difficult, right? To come in and go, hey guys, we're going to sit down as a family, and we're going to do family-led worship, just like we do at church. We're going to teach, and we're going to get into the scriptures, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do some worship, and that may be awkward. And you may be going, "Hey, man, I'm not the teacher, not the kind of teacher like a Chandler or a Shay or a Lee. I just can't do that, or I can't play and lead worship like Bleeker. I'm not as handsome and as bubbly. You know, I just can't do that. I'm not cool like him with the cool hair and everything, right?" And that may not be the case, but here's the deal. Those guys aren't mama and daddy to your kids. And that is huge. That goes well beyond your ability to play guitar or to exegete the scriptures and teach. Man, they love you and they want to hear that from you. And that is huge. I guarantee you your kids will look back on that time with a sweet, sweet thing in their heart of going, "Man, I remember that. That was awesome." Our family would get around and just laugh at dad trying to play the guitar. It was awesome, right? And so, man, I just want to just encourage you. If you're not doing that, man, we've got resources at the church. We can help you. But just to say that, this weekend is just that. It's a weekend. It's a weekend where we highlight family worship, okay? But ultimately, it's going to fall on you guys day to day, week to week, month to month, and throughout the year. You guys are the chief disciplers. One thing I was looking at when my wife and I first started having kids, we had two boys right off the bat. We adopted one and then had one, and they were 13 months apart, which was really scary. We didn't know what we got into, and then we kind of slowed things down. There was like 2 years between when we got a little smarter, right? But one thing about it, I had these two boys, and I was so excited to be a daddy. Like, that's just a cool thing. And if you haven't experienced that, it's an amazing deal. And so, man, I was a complete idiot about parenting, didn't know anything, right? And so I was like, man, I need to read some books. And so I start getting all these books about raising boys, Raising a Modern Day Knight and King Me by Steve Farrar. And I just start reading these just voraciously. I'm like, man, I got to know all these things about how to raise godly men, all right? Just exemplify biblical manhood. And so I start reading these things and studying these things and searching these things out. And I remember we're in the car one day and I'm with my wife and I was like, babe, I was just having a moment, like a real sensitive, sincere moment. I was like, babe, I want to be the best dad in the entire world. And I thought, like, she would pat me on the back and be like, babe, that's so sweet. And, like, we'd, like, start smooching or something. She said this, and my wife is so sweet and yet so prophetic. She said, well, that's great. Well, you know, a big part of being a great dad is being a great husband. And I was like, ow. Have I offended you or something? Like, do we need to have a talk? And she's like, no, I'm just saying, that's just a big part of it. And as I started thinking about that, I was like, that's so true. That's so true. In order to be a great dad and to pass my faith on to my kids and love them and show them Christ, man, I need to do that in my marriage. I need to love my wife well. And looking through the scriptures, when Paul starts talking about families, when he starts addressing families, he always starts with the marriage relationship. You see it in Colossians 3. You see it in Ephesians 5 where we're going tonight. He addresses wives, he addresses husbands, and then he addresses kids. And there is a reason for that, because he's showing in this in the text, he's showing, number one, an authority structure. And he's going, hey, this is how it's going to be built out. All right? And so I'm going to go there with you, and we don't have much time really tonight. We're going to go quick. Just because it's family worship weekend, we've got kids in here, and they couldn't possibly live for Chandler talking an hour and a half. So we're going to go Ephesians 5, starting in verse 22. Ephesians 5, starting in verse 22. It says this, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands." Now, let me talk real quick about this word, submit, because that's kind of a scary word. We hear that and we're like, ugh, I don't like that, you know, hair coming up on the back of our neck, kind of starting to freak out. What this is talking about here is simply going, it's a disposition to yield. A disposition to yield, it's an inclination to follow. Paul is not degrading women by saying this. He's not demoralizing them. He's not saying women are less than. And the reason, the way we know that's true is because he gives the metaphor of the church. He's like, just as a wife would submit to her husband, the church submits to Christ. And we know from the scriptures, we know from Paul's life, his testimony, that he loves the church. I mean, loves the church. Like, was traveling all over the world at his own expense for the sake of the church, that the church might know the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, he's getting flogged and beaten and persecuted in city after city after city for the church, so that the church might know Jesus Christ and might believe in the truth of Jesus Christ and may not fall away from that truth, as we're studying in Galatians right now. He's going, oh, Galatians, somebody's bewitched you, somebody's lied to you, somebody's cheated, stolen this from you. Come back to the gospel. He loves the church. And so right here, he's not demoralizing women. He's just saying, submit to your husbands. And I love that he says this right here, as to the Lord. But see, this is less about your husband as it is much more about the Lord. In 2 Corinthians 5, we see that our goal, our aim is to please the Lord. That's our aim. And so I know, ladies, listen, I know. I'm that flawed husband, that foolish husband that speaks before he thinks. I mean, I do those things, right? I know it's difficult to submit to us. Like, I get it. But that's why God's saying, hey, it's not about just them, it's about me. Your goal is to please me, the Lord, not just your husband. This is so much bigger than just submitting to your husband. It's about pleasing the Lord, as to the Lord. For the husband is the head. And this word head simply means the supplier, the provider, or the leader. And right here, right off the bat, what God's doing is he's building out the hierarchy for the family. In everything that God's built out, he's always built this hierarchy of authority. All right, you see it way back in Genesis. God creates all these things, the plants, the animals, all these creepy crawly things, all these things. And what does he say to man? Man, I've created you in my own image. Genesis 1:26. I've created you in my own image, and that you may have dominion over all things. Right in the beginning, he's beginning to go, hey man, I'm creating a hierarchy of authority. You see it later on in Ephesians 6. You see it in the armor and in the spiritual warfare. There's a hierarchy of spiritual warfare listed out there. Over and over, there's this hierarchy of authority. And so what Paul's doing here in the scriptures, he's laying out the authority structure, the hierarchy for the family. And he's saying, wives, you need to come under that because there's got to be a leader. There's got to be a leader. Any organization you've ever been in, if a organization is leaderless, there's lots of confusion, lots of frustration. People want a leader. People need to know where to go. Now, that doesn't mean your wife doesn't have a voice in that. Okay? My wife is much smarter than I and probably a better leader. I mean, to be honest, she's wiser than me. She understands our kid's heart. I mean, I just kind of do things, and she's like, no, come back up. Look at this. Look what you did. You made the kid cry. I was like, oh, I didn't even know I stepped on your face. You know, I didn't even know that. She's much more sensitive than me. And so the way we operate, I don't go, woman, hush your mouth. You have no voice here. I don't do that. No, I listen to everything she says because a lot of times she's right. And she'll kind of present two options to me and go, all right, Blake, what do you want to do? You want to do this or this? I'm like, well, I think that. Are you sure? Okay, yeah, we'll do that. You're right. Good job. And she's like, good, that's the best, right? I mean, she is an amazing, amazing help to me and to our family. But she does so great at this, submitting to my leadership. Because here's the deal, ladies. Here's the deal. Your kids will learn authority from somewhere, most likely your home. And if they're not seeing it in your home, I don't know where they're going to learn it. Or if they're seeing bad authority, bad submission, a bad understanding of what this is, then it's going to be so damaging for them for the rest of their lives. So incredibly damaging. That is a weighty, weighty thing to go submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Your kids are watching that. They're seeing that stuff. They need to see that in you. Even on bad authority. You think they're going to have just perfect bosses the rest of their life? That all their teachers from elementary all the way to high school are just going to be amazing? No. They're going to need to learn to submit to sinful people. Just like you have to submit to sinful husbands. Man, it's huge. All right, let's keep going. We could hang out here, but we got to keep going because the husbands have a lot. Wives submit, husbands do like 27 things. Here we go. Verse 25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? And gave himself up for her. Love your wives like Christ loved the church, and he gave himself up for her. This is huge. This is how he did it right here. By giving, not only did he die for the church, I mean, this is the gospel, right? That Jesus came to earth to save his people, to die on the cross for our sins. And he rose from the dead right here. He gave himself up. And men, we should be at that same level. We go, hey, man, I'll die for you. I'll lay down my life for you. But men, do we lay it down every day? You see, I feel like men, we get we feel like we have a lot of rights, a lot of privileges that we have earned. Because we're the man, we get to kind of come in, just coast it. Sit on the couch. No, man, we've got to die to some of those things. We've got to die to some of those freedoms. I see so many guys that enter into marriage with this idea that they can just still run and play like they're single. I'm just going to go here, do this, run over here, do that. And that's not loving their wife like Christ loved the church. It's not giving yourself up for them. It's a death, a daily, daily death. So why do we do this? Why do we do it? Check it out, verse 26. That he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of the water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish, that he might sanctify her. Husbands, how many of you guys knew that? That it's your job, it's your role, your responsibility to sanctify your wife. That's huge. Because some of us in here, we're immature, we're lacking in this, we're slow to this, we're not even sanctifying ourselves. Now, I know that it's the Spirit's job to sanctify us, but we all have a role in this. You have a role to sanctify yourself, to train yourself up for godliness, 1 Timothy 4:7 says. And now you're supposed to sanctify your wife? How do you do that? How are you, in the world, are you supposed to sanctify them? By the washing of the water with the word. That's how you do it. Do you know the word? Do you know the word well enough to pastor your wife? And not just to give her some cliche verse. She's struggling, be like, hey, don't lie to your friends. Remember, the Bible says don't lie. No, but to pastor them and love them through truth. Do you know the word well enough to pastor your wife? To wash her with the water of the word. That's kind of a weird phrase, but where Paul's getting that is in ancient Greece. Ancient Greece, they would bring the brides to be, these girls that were about to get married, they would bring them to this river, Okay? They would take them down to this river and they would wash them and they would get like new clothes and all this whole deal and then bring them back. And the whole community, everyone there in Greece, knew that this girl was different. And all the things that she had done in her past were now gone. She was a different person. It's almost like they didn't talk about those things because she was a completely different person. And I love that because that's a picture of the gospel, is it not? And when we come to Christ, we're a new creation in Christ. The old is gone, the new has come. And what a beautiful picture of the gospel. And that's what you're to do to your wives, husbands. Wash her with the water of the word. And that looks a thousand different ways. That didn't look like you just kind of walk in and you're like, all right, baby, before you to go to bed, turn to John 10. I'm going to tell you a little story about Shepherd, right? All right, that's not necessarily what that looks like. But that you continue just to bathe her in the word and bring her back to the word. For me, it's simple. For me, it's so simple. Because if I showed up with my Bible and told my girl to open up her Bible, she would laugh at me and wouldn't stop laughing. Like, we would never get anyone, babe, quit laughing. Come on, get serious, right? It would get weird, right? And so what I do is I just kind of in the car, I'm like, hey, you know what I've been reading? I've been thinking about this verse. I've been in Ephesians 5, and I've been thinking about this. What do you think about that verse? And then she chimes in, and we kind of begin to talk about that. And I'm like, hey, what have you been reading? And then she kind of gets into it, and then we just kind of go. But I'm washing her the water, the word. That the word's always in front of us. All right, let's keep going. Verse 28. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but he nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. I thought this was interesting that he was talking about husbands, love your wives as yourself. And I'm like, does that mean like guys are real selfish and we love ourselves a lot, so we need to love our girls like that? Is that kind of what that means? But here's the deal. God has gifted us and made us his men as providers, right? That's what men do. We provide. We meet needs. And he's going, just as I've created you to meet needs, I want you to meet needs of your wife. That's what the word nourish means, to meet her needs. And so many guys, especially in our culture, very affluent culture, we're like, hey man, I got you a big house. I got you a credit card. It's got no limit. You can just go do whatever you want to on it. Like, you drive a nice car. Haven't I met your needs? And a woman's needs are so much deeper than that. So much deeper than that. Than just being able to go shop or being able to have nice things. Do you know your wife's emotional needs, her relational needs? Can you sit across at a table, like when you're having dinner with a bunch of people, can you sit across at a table and the way she responds to a question or the way she says something or the way she doesn't say something when you think she should have said something, you're cluing in and you're like, something's up. I need to ask this question. I need to go there. Like, do you know your wife's needs that well? So much that she didn't even have to ask. You just do it. And I'm afraid, guys, so often we've gotten such a bad habit of just kind of meeting our needs, of going and doing and buying these things and taking care of us, that we forget to take care of our wife's needs. But God has created us as providers to meet needs, to nourish our wives. You're doing it financially. Are you doing it emotionally, relationally, spiritually? And the next thing is to cherish. And this simply means to treasure, that you hold your wife up of great value and you treasure her. You love her. You see her as worth an immense amount. Do you treasure? Does she feel treasured by you? What are those things, going back to the first thing, that you're giving up? You're going, hey, babe, I'd love to do this. I'd love to go out with the boys tonight. I'd love to go have some time out here, and this is good. And it's right, but man, I just feel like I need to be with you. I want to be with you, so I'm going to stay home. I'm going to tell the boys to go on out without me. I just want to be with you. Let's watch some chick flick. I mean, your girl would freak out, right? I mean, don't watch too many of those. You have to turn in your man card. But anyways... But that's what you're to do, to nourish and cherish your wife. Let's keep reading. We'll finish this out and get into 6:1, because then I want to talk to all the children in here. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. There's our metaphor again. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Do you see how cyclical this is? Like, if the wife respects her husband and submits to him, that he will love her and cherish her and nourish her. And guys, let me tell you this. Your wife will have a lot easier time respecting you and submitting to you if you're loving her like Christ has called you to love her. Like Christ called, love the church. It goes hand in hand. And then here's a word for our children who've gathered in here with us, right? 6:1 says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Now I want to make some clarification, because children, when we think children, we think Little Village. We think Kids Village. But the truth of the matter, what this is really and truly saying here, is this is anybody under your parents' roof. So if you're 18, you're still in high school, this is talking to you. So don't get thrown off by that, but this is who we're talking to. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Once again, it's in the Lord. This is more about the Lord than it is about your parents. Our goal, our aim is to please him. Guys, listen up. If you're a child, a kid, whatever, if you're in here, listen to me. Your job is to obey your parents, because that's what pleases the Lord. You hear me? That makes God happy when you obey your parents. And check it out. That's not all. Honor your father and your mother, for this is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and you may live long in the land. Two things. It says obey, and that's about your actions. And it says honor, and that's about your attitudes. My kids do this all the time, and they're okay right now. Like, I'll go, hey, I need you to go clean your room. And, you know, they're watching Tom and Jerry, which is a phenomenal show, by the way. They're watching Tom and Jerry, which, honestly, this is a side note. Kids have no excuse now, right? Pause. We didn't have no pause button. You remember that? We're like, can I wait till a commercial? Can I wait till a commercial? And when the commercial on, you knew you had 60 seconds. Clean that room up and get back in your seat. You remember that? You're like backing out of the room, and you just take off. Like you're stealing second or something. Kids have no excuse today, right? They're like, pause on the DVR, or I'll just watch it later, right? No excuse. There should be no whining. That's a side note. I don't know where that came from, right? The 5 o'clock didn't get that, so that's for y'all, all right? Yeah, when you're commanded to your parents say, hey, I need you to go and clean your room, or go do this, or go pick up your clothes, or do this, right? Even if you do it and you have a bad attitude, that's sin. Because what he's saying here is honor the Lord with a good attitude, with a right attitude, not with your lips sticking out and tears running down your face because you have to go do it. No, you honor them. You honor them and obey them. You do the action, you obey, and you do it with a right attitude. And here's the truth of this, guys. Here's the truth of this. All this stuff that has been given to us, wives, submit, respect, husbands, love as Christ loved the church. I mean, that's huge, weighty stuff. It's huge and weighty stuff, and it's incredibly difficult. And so there's probably two of you in here that are in two different camps. One of you is going, man, I feel challenged tonight. My wife, we're going to go home. We're going to have a meeting in the living room. And we're all going to say our name on three. Ready? Let's go. Right? And you feel challenged. You want to do this. You want to like pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Like, let's do this. And then there's the other part in here that you're going, oh my gosh, as soon as you said Ephesians 5, I didn't want nothing of this. Like, I wish I wasn't in here, because I failed on this over and over and over and over. And you just feel defeated, even hearing it again. It's like somebody ripping the scab off and pouring salt in the wound. So let me say this to both of you. The truth is, you can't do this apart from Christ. Apart from the gospel invading your heart and changing your life and transforming you, you cannot do this. Not on your own strength. I mean, it's what we've been talking about in Galatians for like 6 months. You can't do it. The law was set up to show you can't do it. You need someone to step in the middle and do it for you. And so this has got to be a work of the Spirit for you to do any of this. And so may my hope and prayer, whether you're a wife who's struggling to submit to a sinful husband or a husband that's struggling to love your wife because you love yourself so much, or whether you're a kid and you're going, man, I really don't want to obey. I want to do my own thing. You've got to ask God to change your heart every day. And go, God, I struggle with this. I don't want to obey. I don't want to submit. I don't want to love her. I want to love myself. Change my heart. And you've got to ask the Lord to do a work of his Spirit in your heart and your life. But the great news is the gospel. We know he can do that. We know he can change us, that he can sanctify us, that he can make us a different person. And so there is hope. There is hope, but it's hope in the gospel and in the powerful working of his Spirit. Let's pray. Father, thank you, thank you, thank you for Family Worship Weekend. Thank you for kids sitting in here and singing worship songs and praising your name, and for moms and dads, and thank you for the church, and thank you for the way that you've loved the church, that you've given us this example, this model of what our family should be. And so, God, I pray, I beg you that you would bless families at the Village Church, that you would do such a powerful work in these families, that you would convict of sin and righteousness, of where we've fallen short in submitting and respecting and loving and obeying and honoring, and that you would change our hearts, that we would have a brokenness in our spirits about who we are and who we become, and that you would change us and make us new. God, would you do your work in us so that we might bring great glory and honor to you?
Thank you for listening to audio from the Village Church, located in Texas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about the Village Church, please visit us online at www.thevillagechurch.net.